One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hey listeners, let's take a moment for a shout out to our sponsor, Squarespace. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for creators to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create an awesome website, connect with your audience, and sell anything all in one place, all on your terms. Even if you don't know where to start with creating a website, Squarespace has you covered with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally created layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business, and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people. Flexible payment options make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So, ready to get started? Head over to squarespace.com/gamescoop for a free trial. And when it's showtime, use our special promo code GAMESCOOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now, let's dive back into GAMESCOOP. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GAMESCOOP. I'm your host, Stephen Hadfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey!
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And sitting in for Tina Amini this week will be Mark Medina.
One day, me and Tina will be on an episode together, but today is not that day.
Maybe next week.
Maybe next week, because I think Justin will be on vacation. So.
All right.
We'll see.
It's spring break.
Spring break. Heading down to Mexico. We've got a great show for this week. We're going to talk about the Ghosts of Tsushima movie that was just revealed today. We're going to perform a little thought experiment and imagine what if Sega were still making consoles today? What if...
Hey, that's my second favorite kind of experiment.
What's your first favorite?
It's the normal experiment.
Just a regular-ass experiment.
It's the typical one.
Testing? What's the process? You come up with a hypothesis, and then you test it? Or do you collect data first? I forget what the actual order is. Yeah,
what we don't like is social experiments. Those are a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
my,
But first, every 2 or 3 weeks is a new rumor, it seems, about a Nintendo Switch Pro. The latest round of rumors comes from a report from Bloomberg that claims the Nintendo Switch Pro will reportedly use an upgraded NVIDIA chip that offers better graphics and processing. It's going to support NVIDIA's DLSS rendering, which is deep learning super sampling, which is basically fancy upscaling. And this Switch Pro could be released this holiday, 2021. However, analysts expect it to come in with a higher price, $50 to $100 more, to put it between $350 and $400. So let's imagine that these reports are true for a second. Is this enough? If it's using this fancy NVIDIA chip, which is already on the GeForce RTX 20 and 30 cards, I believe, this would be the first time it's available on consoles. Deep learning super sampling would basically take games that aren't in 4K, say they're 1080p, and it makes them look as if they are. Like I said, fancy upscaling. So is that enough to keep the Switch relevant when it is being compared to next gen consoles, PS5 and Xbox Series X?
Well, I don't like how you frame the question, David.
Oh, okay.
I mean, because the Switch is already relevant against the next gen consoles.
Okay, that's fair. However, it cannot hold. It's like graphically, sure. It's nowhere near. Will this put it in the same football field as the PlayStation 5?
The intention of Nintendo when they do this, like the DSi, for instance, is to make sure, or the Game Boy SP, is to make sure that people can play the games they already own and they don't have to do a bunch of work to upgrade those, and that, you know, people can buy things off the store shelf if those ever exist again. Yeah. But also have a little bit of a step towards, you know, looking cleaner and nicer on their big, you know, televisions. Now they all have 4K TVs. That's all. They're just walking that line. It's so safe. It's just like, and they know they're going to have like a core group of people that are like, yes, I will buy everything new Nintendo. I want Breath of the Wild 2 to look amazing. But then there's plenty of people who are just like, can you just make sure my kids' games still play on the system? I mean, 2DS?
It really depends on, is it a DSi, which actually was very marginally more powerful than the DS, or is it like an Xbox One X? Is this a Switch Pro, or until we know exactly what the NVIDIA guts are inside this thing, like, it's a little bit hard to say.
What's the most backwards thing about what you said? It's that they said it's going to be more expensive. Every single thing that you just talked about should be about adapting to newer, more standardized, more available parts that helps Nintendo make more systems. Because they can't just keep on going back to those screens and the processors from like five years ago. Those should become cheaper over time, but they also become obsolete. And, you know, you have to like basically keep making them, even though everybody else is using a different chip. So like, it should be more popular. Stuff should be, you know, at least the same level, not more expensive.
I love my Switch. It's probably, well, it's not my most played home console anymore, but I play it. I love it. But a $400 Switch,
especially when you can get a PlayStation 5 for that price.
You can get a PlayStation 5 for that price, and it's not even like a janky one like the Xbox.
I think the weird thing about it is when Xbox One X, or like when Xbox One came out, of course it was bundled with Kinect, but it was $500. So then when the One X came out, it was $500. Mm-hmm. Same with PS4. PS4 was $400. Then when PS4 Pro came out, it was $400. It's tough because Switch hasn't had a price drop.
Never had
so
a price
the
drop.
The only thing for them to do is to make it more expensive.
They could drop the price of their other models right now and put this out for the regular one. I think the problem
with that is exactly what Justin said, which is does this make the Switch like more relevant? I don't think that's a problem at all. The Switch is the number. It's hard to find Series X and PS5s right now, but the Switch is like dominating the charts every month. They're not having any problem selling Switches. So I think if they're going to be like, hey, we're going to make a more expensive one and it's going to be better, I think they're just okay with that because they know people are just going to buy it.
Yeah, so you think they're targeting the Nintendo core fans. They're like, these suckers will buy our more expensive system.
It's tough because with the Switch, exactly. It's like the normal Switch was like always worse than like a PS4 and Xbox One. So now this is just going to be a worse PS5. But like, people don't care. People are still playing Doom and 540p. Like, they just don't care.
I mean,
they love Switch for what it is.
That may be why I didn't give this in 1 ounce of thought before we sat down to record the show. But it may be why they're keeping Zelda under wraps. Like, maybe there's going to be maybe Zelda runs in 4K on the new Switch, but then you can still play it on the old Switch and play it in 1080p.
Do Zeldas ever not span two consoles now?
It's
like the series that spans two consoles. It's so funny. It's always on two.
So I think if I were a betting man, first of all, we don't even know.
You say
if this
that
is...
every week. When are you going to become this betting man? You keep dreaming of.
When are you going to transition over?
Yeah, this is why I'm actually not allowed to gamble in real life anymore.
No one to hold them.
Yeah, you're right. That I do use that phrase a lot. But like, we don't know that this is real. Like, there's a lot of sort of smoke, and there's so much smoke now that like we have to believe there's fire. But like, it's possible that there is no Switch Pro. But if it exists, I think it's probably a significant step up. The Switch came out over 3.5 years ago. It'll be almost 4 years ago by the time
it is 4 years ago right now, right? Because it was 2017?
Correct.
2017,
I'm off by a whole year, so it'll be 4.5 years when the Switch Pro drops. So I don't think it's a DSi. I think it's probably a significant half generation up, and I think it probably has a bigger, nicer screen and probably runs games in 4K. And then And then I think that's the differentiator is the resolution. Like, you can play these games in 720p or 1080p on your Switch, or in 1440p or 4K on your Switch Pro. And like, that makes sense. That's like easy to message. And yeah, I mean, I won't like it, but I will buy it.
So I'm going to run you through a thought exercise then, because that's what I want. I would actually like that. Like, I want my Switch games to look as good as they can, because I think Nintendo's artists are my favorite in the industry, and I'd like to see their games look the best they can. So what I like to do with Nintendo to predict the future is go with the thing that I want, and then they absolutely won't do that. And they'll usually do the opposite. So that's what I like to run here. So if I really want them to release something that's going to make Breath of the Wild 2 look so cool on contemporary televisions, like, they're not going to do that. They're going to weld the controllers to the side like they've already done, and like, you know, take out the battery or something like
that. Or it'll be a home Switch only.
Yeah.
The opposite of a Switch
with the
Lite.
Same power.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So just like a Switch Lite, well, a Switch that doesn't switch.
Yeah.
Well, okay. But hold on. If they didn't have to put a battery in it anymore, mm-hmm. and if it didn't have to have a screen,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they could probably make a really, really powerful Switch box that doesn't cost a load of money.
Mm-hmm.
But it just wouldn't switch.
Yeah.
What if the thing you buy is the controllers, and those plug into your television? And if you want, you can get a spare screen to take with you on the go.
There you go.
So they're just going to piecemeal the Switch out. Got it.
Well, okay. I mean, that's Nintendo now, right? They're like, let's take all these parts and take them apart and reattach them. We put some controllers in the side, but you can reattach them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of with Justin on the whole Zelda thing, because I remember in 2017 when the Switch did come out, and it was like, it was that and 1-2 Switch. It was like a handful of games, a typical launch. And I remember so many people being like, the Switch is amazing. I love Breath of the Wild. Yeah. And I was like, I remember I couldn't get a grasp on how like good the actual Switch was, because everybody was just enamored by Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, but if Breath of the Wild was on PS4, would we just play it there? Like, or you have to play it on the Switch. So that's why you love the Switch. And so it makes me wonder, like, if it's going to be like, hey, Breath of the Wild 2, it's amazing. It looks great. And you can only play it on the new Nintendo Switch. And that's their like Trojan horse to get the new Nintendo Switch out there, so you can get rid of the old one.
Well, it'll definitely not be an exclusive.
But you think it'll run for both?
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
yeah. They're not going to burn everyone's spot on Switch.
They'll show the pretty versions. That'll be it'll be like Miles Morales. Miles Morales in most people's minds is a PS5 game,
right?
Even though we all know that that's also a PS4 game.
Or they could do the Wii U thing where they make us all buy it again in HD.
Yeah,
it is worth noting, according to Bloomberg sources, this DLSS requires custom code for software, meaning it will more likely be used to create better looking new games rather than upgrade existing ones. So I don't think Witcher 3 on Switch on the Switch Pro is going to look like it does on a PS4 Pro, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's also interesting to think, like, we think the Switch is comfortably in the middle of its lifespan, 4 years in. If this were the NES, 4 years in, it would be 1990. The Super Nintendo would already be out in Japan and be out the next year in North America.
I was thinking that too. Like, the Switch being 4 years old is really tripping me up. It tripped me up earlier this show. Like, I still think about it as a fairly new thing. Like, this device has a lot of potential and like it's really cool, but I'm like, damn, like, we're getting close. I mean, maybe not if there's a Switch Pro. Maybe we do have 4 more years of Switch coming, but like, we're probably getting pretty close to like a new Nintendo console. And like, that's so exciting. I love Nintendo, and it's doubly exciting because they always knock our socks off with something weird and strange. And even when it's bad, like the Wii U, like, at least they're out there swinging, you know, like, they're swinging for the fences every single time. They've been doing it every single console since the Wii. They're insane. They're an insane company that makes insane hardware. And like, the idea that like, within the next, hopefully 3-4 years, like, we'll get some new crazy piece of hardware from Nintendo is really exciting to me.
Yeah.
You know, the Switch being 4 years old, one of the reasons that it seems weird is that 2020 was the Switch's year. You know, Animal Crossing and the pandemic made the Switch the thing. And that happened later in the life cycle than other Nintendo systems, which were big hits, right?
Yeah.
So that might actually change Nintendo's calculation about like what they have here in their hands. They have this thing in their hands that everybody understands right now, that everybody has the ability to buy software for. If I were Nintendo, I'd be focusing like on software like crazy right now and getting that into households with all these Switches. Like, that's the point of consoles, to get this software into people's houses. And that's what I'd want too. But again, that's also what I want. So Nintendo's almost certainly not doing that.
They're going to do the exact opposite. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, Nintendo's playing their own game, so they're sort of unmoored from time and the console generations. Mm. We're like, when a PS5 is coming out, Xbox has to release a new Xbox. Like, they have to. Maybe not the same year, but certainly within the next 12 months, right? But, like, Nintendo can do whatever it wants. Like, if they want the Switch to exist for 10 years, like, eventually it's going to start to look old and feel old, and people would be like, this tech is old and the screen looks bad. But like, when they're not competing with contemporary brand new tech anyway, like, the Switch can last for as long as they want it to. Like, the Game Boy was around for a decade.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. The Wii, I've always thought of the Wii as Nintendo's white flag of surrender, admitting they cannot compete against Sony and Microsoft in terms of like high fidelity, the highest in AAA graphics. They just can't do it. So I don't know. It's strange to think about them coming back again and trying to compete on that level.
But Microsoft and Sony look at Nintendo and say, like, we totally screwed up. They sold twice as many systems as us and spent a lot less money on each system and sold probably three or four times as much hardware or software. So, like, you know, on the Nintendo level, their surrender was like their biggest victory.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, like, many, many pundits, probably me included, if you go back and listen to shows from a decade ago, like, the Wii was the most successful.
The gambling pundit.
Please, I don't want that to be a thing. The Wii was the most successful Nintendo had ever been in its history. It was a worldwide phenomenon. It sold 100 million plus consoles. And then Nintendo's willingness to throw it away, like, to throw that brand away and, like, no, the Nintendo Switch is our thing now. So, like, part of me wants to be like, no, the Switch is just Nintendo's brand. It's identity. They're going to have a Switch Pro and then a Switch 2 and a Switch this and a Switch that. But, like, ooh. Like,
Switch gonna, this would be a good name for the next console.
Switch this. Switch. They're going to throw it away, right? Like, eventually the Switch name will be sunsetted and they'll replace it with something else and some new vision for what they want video games to be. And that's just so wild to me. Like, their willingness to, like, throw away these brands that were worldwide phenomenons and success.
Yeah, they threw away Game Boy. Like, why can't they just keep using Game Boy?
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's like throwing away iPhone. Like, would that ever happen?
Yeah.
Like, we'll probably spend the next 80 years with iPhones.
and phones
aren't even relevant. The word phone isn't even relevant anymore.
It's so against the conventional wisdom of what any other company on earth would do.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's because of, like, corporate changes and, like, and you know, like, some kind of, you know, vying for power and ownership within Nintendo. Like, we're never going to know those stories, unfortunately. Mm. But, you know, it is interesting to think, like, I mean, Gunpei Yokoi was Game Boy, and, you know, he died. Like, I wonder if Game Boy went away because of that. And then, you know, post Iwata, like, maybe Wii went away after that. Like, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, Gunpei Yokoi already didn't work at Nintendo, though, when he you know, tragically passed away.
I think is he just post the Virtual Boy then?
Yeah, I think so, yes. Virtual Boy didn't work out, and then he was not at Nintendo anymore.
Yeah, and they did do the Game Boy Advance concurrently to that.
Mm.
Yeah, I can't really picture a world where... I'm with you guys on what you're saying. I also can't really picture a world where Nintendo's next several consoles aren't just hybrids. Like, they seem to have, like, got this, like, magic. I don't know. I can't really picture them giving it away. But no, I agree that the Wii is one of the best selling consoles of all time. But
every you can go back to GameScoop, I'm positive we're like, Nintendo's a motion control company now. That's what they are, and that's what they do.
But it's like, motion controls kind of came and went, and they're kind of back now a little bit, but not too much. But it's like, you know, everybody kind of had their hand in it with Kinect and PlayStation Move, and then that kind of went where it's like, the idea of being able to, you know, play a game on the go, that's I don't see that as a trend. I see that as, like, just the new way people want to be able to play games is being able to have it everywhere. And so where Nintendo would want to evolve and kind of move away from what could be seen as a trend, instead they're like, I just have hope that they're like, we finally found the thing that will keep our console relevant, and it's the fact that you can take it anywhere. My idea on why I think that they would make it a little bit stronger is because it seemed like at first they didn't really care so much about third-party support, but now there's these long droughts where there's no games coming out, and you're seeing like EA put all their games on Switch. I'm wondering if they're starting to care a little bit more about third-party support. And then you see something like Apex come on Switch, and it's like, it's fine, but it could be much, much better. I'm wondering if there's a directional shift there.
You know what Nintendo hasn't done in a little while, which we should be expecting, because this is, they always pull this out when all we want is a new Zelda game, is they haven't done a lifestyle or health thing in a little while. They did Wii Fit, the Ring Fit, and you know, that I don't know if that was like as huge as they wanted it to be, but you know, it's like that Wii Fit Brain Age beat has been, it's been a little bit lessened.
Yeah,
you couldn't find those rings anywhere when they first came out.
I think Ring Fit was a big hit. But maybe not like a Brain Age like level hit.
It did sell out forever.
We're definitely missing some kind of non-gamer heart monitor, you know, stair stepper. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Product.
I think it sold out when the pandemic happened, because I bought our Ring Fit, right. And I just walked into a store and bought it, and then it was like a month later in March is when you just could not find them anymore. Mm-hmm. I really think it was a pandemic thing.
And it worked. Everybody lost a lot of weight during the pandemic. Because of Ring Fit and exercising at home.
We're all so skinny now.
They have Miitopia coming to Switch, right?
Miitopia is bad.
Not quite the same thing.
Dude, that game is such a miserable experience.
It's so bad.
It's like the saddest Tamagotchi, like make you wait for things crap game.
Yep.
Hate it.
Accurate.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. We have an email from Curtis from Ottawa, Canada, that's relevant to our Nintendo discussion. And he wants to know, why does Nintendo hate kids? he asks,
what a interesting take.
In playing a recent AAA title, I was surprised to see great accessibility options with voice to text for menu options, which got me thinking of my son. He's 5 going on 6, loves to play video games, but he can't read. This makes many games inaccessible to him, but the worst offender is always Nintendo. They usually have the least amount of voice acting in their games. And when they do have some, it's usually not everywhere, which still means mom and dad need to sit with him to tell him what to do. Sure, eventually he understands how to proceed, but I don't understand
why
a family-friendly company like Nintendo doesn't include more voice acting and accessibility options for a young audience, especially one that they seem to be targeting. What's up with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great point. Like my daughter is a little bit older, but she was that age when she was playing Mario Odyssey. Like that game has so much text, like pages and pages and pages of text, like your hat's telling you things and Bowser's telling you things. And like when you're an adult, like you don't think about it, right? Like you're just reading it and processing it. But I'm like, That game is not very friendly for younger audiences, and it's doubly weird because Nintendo bends over backwards to make their gameplay so accessible and friendly for younger audiences. Mm-hmm. Like, that game has a really modern and clever take on, what do you call it, like an assist mode. Like, you can turn on blue arrows that, like, tell you exactly where to go and exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And yet, like, you can't read. We don't care about you. Get out of here.
I think Nintendo, it makes me wonder if they just don't care, or if it's they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because like their games, the not talking is a charm. Like, wouldn't it be weird if Mario Odyssey 2 and Mario's like, hey guys, I gotta go on this. Like, people would be furious. Like, I remember there was like, what was like 4 or 5 years ago, there was this whole like, is it time for Link to talk? And everyone's like, Link better not talk. And, you know, Animal Crossing, that's my Animal Crossing impression. Like, that's what people want. And if all of a sudden the villagers was like, hey, how's it going? You should cut these trees. People would be furious at that.
Yeah.
But
I think you're right. Like, the more time that passes,
The longer they've gone on, it's like this charm that they really can't move away from. But the thing is, when it comes to like differently abled accessibility options, the Switch doesn't have anything. You can change the color of the screen. That's basically it. I was tweeting about this like a week ago. I started playing, I was using them for the wrong reasons, but I was playing Last of Us 2 to try to get the Platinum Trophy. And you can go through the accessibility options and make it basically free. You can make it where all the collectibles highlight and you could just see them anywhere. Ellie gets a move that's not in the game, where if you push a button, it does like a pulse and shows you where everything is. And it's like, those are amazing, amazing options. Yeah. And you're never going to see stuff like that on Switch. Or like, not never. It's a shame that you don't see it on Switch.
Yeah, in their defense, a lot of this accessibility stuff that we're seeing now in games is still fairly new. And Nintendo's just always been a little bit behind the curve with, you know, sort of those sort of advancements, and like their online infrastructure is still like generations behind Xbox and PlayStation, right?
So I'll say the serious stuff first and get to all my jokes.
Okay, good.
So for the accessibility portion of this, that's a really, really important thing. And the way to get around that for dialogue and not having Link talk, it would be to have a storybook reading mode where somebody says, and then Link said this and this and this and this. And then the Goron said this and this and this and this. That is a way to get around provide actual meaningful accessibility for people that have trouble reading, people that can't read. And then that'd be really good for kids, right? You don't have to voice everything. You can just have the audio there of the text. So I think that's an important step that could be taken. Now, what is better than a family-friendly thing to force parents to sit with their kids and play the damn video games? That's family friendly. So I agree with the premise that they're not kid friendly. That's true.
Absolutely true. Family friendly company,
but it's very family friendly to be like, you got to sit with your kids and play these games.
Yeah, I do agree that the idea of sitting down and playing a game with my son doesn't sound all that terrible. One of these days. Yeah.
It's pretty terrible. It's pretty terrible. I think I talked about it on the show a lot. Like, I've been thinking my entire life about having kids and us bonding over video games together. It's a little bit of a miserable experience for dad now that I'm actually living it. They're really, really bad at games and kind of whine and are kind of mad when, you know, they die and lose. And
you can say that about everything, not just games. They're really bad at it. They whine. They die easily.
Yeah.
That's kids, man.
I can relate because when people play Mario 64 in front of me, it's like watching a child play.
Oh, my gosh.
I just want to take the controller from them.
Oh,
they're so bad.
Can we mute Mark?
They're so bad.
To clarify, I don't feel superior. You know, it's just like, I'm not like, oh,
you're
so bad at this.
I'm the best.
For me, it's more just like, you know, the game, like, I think that I struggled alone with video games a lot. Like, my memory, and it's hard to, like, how well do you really remember being 5 and 6? But, like, my memory of video games is, like, sitting alone in my basement and being frustrated and mad at the game by myself. Like, that's what I remember doing when I was a kid.
Like, I never called my parents to help. I'd never have done that. They would have been like, you're doing what?
Yeah.
So now it brings out, again, it's not that I'm like, huh, you're bad at this game. Ugh, shame on you. But it's more just like, it turns my daughter into this version of her that I don't like, where she's kind of whiny and like, you know, upset and frustrated. And like, it's not great. It's not a great scene. And it really stresses me out to play games with her for that reason. And so, but I also think it's because as a dad, I'm really excited to have her play Mario Odyssey and these other games. And it may just be a little bit too much at that age. We're like, she totally has fun playing like PBS games on her iPad, and like that side of her doesn't come out. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, Nintendo's clearly anti-dad as well, then.
Hey, you said it.
Okay, let's switch gears over to the world of PlayStation for a little bit. We just learned today Ghost of Tsushima is getting a film adaptation directed by Chad Stahelski. He is the director of the John Wick trilogy and the forthcoming John Wick 4. So that seems to be like a pretty good fit to me, although maybe a little random. And I should also point out, I don't think filming in John Wick 4 has begun. So if this movie actually ends up getting made, I think it's a little bit of a ways off. But I obviously loved Ghost of Tsushima, and I really, really like the John Wick movies. So this all sounds like good news to me. Sam, I know you liked Ghost of Tsushima. I don't believe you've viewed any of the John Wick films.
John Wick films. Yeah. No, the thing I don't care about in most games, but especially in Ghost of Tsushima, is the storytelling. Like, there is some cool side quest parts where it's like, oh, this is a more interesting story than the main story. So that worries me. But, like, you know, setting things in feudal Japan that are beautiful, that can always be nice. I don't think they need to be inspired by video games necessarily to be successful, though. I wish we had more of them. So I'm happy that it exists, because it'll be a cool thing shot in Japan.
I'll point out the John Wick films have just the bare minimum of any kind of story. Yeah. And it's just an excuse to get John Wick into fight scenes. So
this movie is going to be about shooting dogs, is what it's going to be about.
With arrows, maybe. You do a lot of that.
Mean dogs. The star of Ghosts, and I enjoyed it. I didn't like it as much as the rest of the Scoop crew. But for me, the star of that game was the fantastical environment and that island. And so to film it in live action, it's just going to immediately lose. Like, well, now we're in the real world. Now we're in a place that actually exists on this earth. And like that instantly makes me less interested.
It could be fantastically augmented, you know, like kind of a cool magical realism thing. That'd be cool.
I mean, or like, you know, obviously like Lord of the Rings is incredible, right? And that was all filmed in New Zealand, but it transports you to Middle Earth and so on and so forth. So like movies have been doing that since the beginning of time. But like, I don't know, it's going to be a samurai revenge story, which like, you know, okay, it's as good an idea for a movie as any.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll film on the actual island of Tsushima.
It'll probably be Los Angeles and Hawaii.
So it's going to be Hawaii for sure.
It's Sony they seem all in on the whole like movie. There's like a Twisted Metal and Last of Us and Uncharted and now Ghost of Tsushima. I got to be honest. I'm not really excited for any of the titles I just mentioned.
Universe, Mark?
I don't think. Oh, well, sure. Whoa. I don't think I'd be excited for this one either. I don't know. I just. They're such well-told games that
Twisted Metal is what you're talking about specifically, right? Uh-huh.
Exactly. The narrative in Twisted Metal, how did he become an ice cream man with a fire head? I read a story the other day, and it was like The Last of Us TV show is, you know, season one is the first game. And I'm like, I mean, that game's been out since 2013. Like, do I now need to watch a show that's just that again? Like, I don't know. I'm just not interested in any of these, to be honest with you.
Have you, I mean, there aren't all that many. There are very, very few good video game adaptations. Like, did you see Tomb Raider? The most recent Tomb Raider?
I did. It's fine. I saw it in theaters. I thought it was totally fine. I didn't think it was bad, but I thought it was fine. I don't know. I remember I watched the Assassin's Creed movie. I thought that was not great. I think the only thing that comes to mind when it comes to like video game stuff is like The Witcher. The Witcher was really good, but I'm not a fan of the Witcher games. Like, I never played more than a few hours of Witcher 3. So to me, that was just a TV show. So I think that's my problem, is like being told The Last of Us story again with just new people. is a little strange. Maybe if I hadn't played The Last of Us, I think I'd be more excited.
There's definitely an element, like, you know, really, really story-rich games that are lauded for their story, like Last of Us, it makes you wonder what the point of an adaptation is. It's like, well, how long is The Last of Us? 12 hours? Is it going to be a 12-hour TV show? Like, okay, what are we doing here? Sure. Why are we doing this?
You know what I am excited for? And I was talking with my friends about this. So Amazon is making the Fallout show. And that kind of excites me because with Fallout, unless it's based on one of the games, which it's not going to be, they kind of can do whatever they want with that because it's just post-apocalyptic stuck in the 50s, right? So, like, that's totally fine. I'm really excited for something like that. But, like, the fact that Ashley Johnson is Ellie and Troy Baker is Joel, and now they're just these different people, but it's still Joel. It's still Ellie. I think I'd be more – I think I'd care more if it was Last of Us universe and not just those characters.
Sure. It could be. I'm wondering aloud, like maybe HBO sees potential in that story reaching a wider audience beyond gamers, right? So like a lot of people play games, but not everyone, but everyone watched Game of Thrones. So yeah. Maybe everyone would like the story of The Last of Us, you know, or.
Yeah.
Well, to be clear, I understand why it's being made. I'm just saying I'm not that excited.
I hope they make a game based off it.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of funny because, like, Ghost of Tsushima is obviously and heavily inspired by classic samurai cinema, and now they're making a movie based on it.
Just so yeah. It's a little bit like... And, like, you know, a lot of Japanese cinema is made in Japan by Japanese people, which is also a problem with, you know, potentially this movie not having any involvement there. I mean, there's a lot of great classic movies you could turn to before going to see a video game based movie that's based on those movies. Like,
that's true.
It seems a little silly.
Okay.
Did you know there's a Street Fighter 2 movie that a video game is based on?
Yeah, Street Fighter 2, the movie, the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Is it great?
I mean, it's great because of how terrible it is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address. I was told to bring this back. Gamescoop@IGN.com. Just like JP from Cleveland did. JP Land. He said, I wanted to ask the best podcast around, where do you think gaming would be if Sega had survived as a console manufacturer? I feel the Dreamcast was by far their best product and ahead of its time. Skies of Arcadia, Grandia 2, Sonic Adventure, Project Justice, Power Stone, Shenmue, so many great games. Do you think the video game industry would be healthier with a fourth choice or would it be too cluttered? Thanks for all the gems.
A rift just opened in space-time, and we are getting a taste of what it would be like if Sega was still out there with a console making games, because Balan Wonderworld is coming out next week or in a couple weeks. And that game
comes
like
out tomorrow.
It looks like a horrific Nights into Dreams style game.
Yeah.
Right on the edge of the Dreamcast lifetime.
Well, Sega's obviously still making games. They still make software.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as
I don't know. I've thought about it a bunch, like where another console would lie. It's like they all kind of, I feel like PlayStation and Xbox was already too close, and now they've kind of separated with Xbox being more of a service versus PlayStation relying on their first party, and then obviously Nintendo fills its niche. So it's like, I really don't know
It's just like what I was saying with the Wii. Like when you had the GameCube and the Xbox and PlayStation 2, it was all too close. Nintendo just couldn't compete in that arena. So they were like, screw it. We're going to do something totally different.
Yeah, it's great. Like Nintendo's cracked that nut, right?
Yeah. But then I can't imagine another console. I don't know like
It's iPhone. I mean, iPhone did that. That's the most recent thing where that happened. And so did Android, which is just kind of, you know, aping that. But like, you know, things are breaking in. Like, I think that the streaming thing that Mark just said was really apt. Like, if Netflix really wanted to disrupt the market and really wanted to, I'm not saying streaming games, like streaming games are bad, but service-based, you know, subscription games and really build that out, like that's like something where Nintendo and Microsoft, and they're just, you know, they're just getting that together now. And it's a really strong idea.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Sega, in my opinion, are at their best with the Crazy Arcade era of Sega. You know, you brought up Virtua Cop last week on the show, which I hadn't thought about. Yeah, and Crazy Taxi, Power Stone, like all those Dreamcast, the arcade at home was just an awesome, awesome time. But other than that, like their identity is really scattered, you know, kind of partially because the history of Sega is really split between the East and the West when Sega of America was kind of in charge. And so they've always been kind of a scattered company without sort of a unifying identity or sort of ethos behind what they did. Unlike, say, Nintendo, like even when Nintendo's all over the place, at least they seem to all be kind of driving toward the same destination in a way that Sega never was, in my opinion.
You know what Sega did? Is that they hit up a teen audience with a negative message that Nintendo was for babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's an amazing moment, right?
And it all came from Sega of America.
America.
Thomas Clancy and his team.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so the Sega of Japan that became Dreamcast and everything is just a completely different company, right? Yeah. And like, I can absolutely see somebody coming in right now and saying, like, this is an adult system for adults, and then 13-year-olds will love it. Like, that's like something that is not being done. But I think the first Xbox tried to do that a little bit.
Yeah, you're right.
And didn't do great at it, but tried that. And I think there's always an edge in right now. Like, every single E3 conference, quote unquote, right now from that I would predict for this year is going to be like a mix of like, you know, cool violent games and like really family friendly fare.
I have a hard time, like the world is a different place in 2021, and I have a hard time seeing something that's like marketed as being for teens as coming across as anything except the most lame.
Yes. And some of the, you know, I mean, teens today are awesome and different. And, you know, I don't think would accept there's the violent side and then there's the sex side of those like 90s games.
Yeah. There's also the gross side, right? Like extreme, like, good. Yeah. I mean, gross, just like Boogerman, that sort of thing.
Oh, the gross stuff. Yeah. Well, that would still appeal to kids. Yeah. So I think if you include the swears and the boogers, I think you could pick up a pretty big audience still.
The Sega Genesis is really the only really successful Sega console, and it's because of Sega of America. So I don't know. It's hard to imagine Sega surviving as a console manufacturer through three more generations after the Dreamcast.
Maybe we should just start a Sega of America.
Yeah. I mean,
you could have, like, in this parallel universe, it's probably a parallel universe where Sega and Nintendo merged and joined forces to take on Microsoft and Sony.
Yeah.
And then you have these, you know, Japanese dedicated game makers taking on the electronics giants.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Thanks.
This is Michael Charbonneau in Barrie, Vermont. And he says, I finally finished reading Ready Player 2. I love the nostalgia overload. Got me thinking about video game Easter eggs. What are your favorite Easter eggs in gaming? My favorite is the Batman Arkham City one found in Arkham Asylum.
Boy,
Arkham Asylum is full of cool stuff like that. That's a really good example.
It had the one big giant secret. We just talked about that on this show.
That was one of the ones I was going to bring up is like, the Arkham games are cool because, yeah, Arkham Asylum, they had this room that basically revealed Arkham City and nobody knew it existed. Yeah. Is it Arkham Asylum or Arkham Knight, the one where you change your console's date and then Calendar Man?
Yeah, we talked about that recently.
I want to say that was City.
I think that was City.
Okay, so the one I didn't mention. Awesome.
He has a cell in Arkham Asylum. Like, it's his jail cell. So I think that's
it's like you. If it's like you change the date on your console, and like he changes his dialogue.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't think of like specific Easter eggs that are like super cool. I think like Sasquatch and Grand Theft Auto 5 is cool because it's like answering the question of like, was there ever Sasquatches in the game? And it's kind of like a joke mission.
Yeah. I like.
They never had a jetpack though, right? The alien stuff never turned out to be true.
No, it's all a rumor.
No.
I like all the I like the Chris Houlihan room in Zelda Link to the Past, and the story behind it is insane.
Oh, that's the fan won a contest, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yep. And then it's just in the game. It's canonical in there till the end of time.
Mark, what are the best Mario 64 Easter eggs?
I don't think there are Easter eggs in that game. Of course, people will have Easter eggs. Like, there's like the fake, like, yep. L is real, stuff like that. But like, that's, I mean, it's not an Easter egg. It's like retroactively an Easter egg because people thought it meant that Luigi was in the game.
Yeah.
It's yep. not, though. So it's like,
well, there's Yoshi at the end is a good one.
I mean, yeah, it's like you always bridge this thing of like a secret versus an Easter egg. I guess that would be an Easter egg, you know? Yoshi being at the end giving you 100 lives when you've done everything in the game, you don't need them.
So I think of Mario and Zelda games as being the essential Easter egg games. And that's because, like, from the very start, the Mario series has been about hiding stuff and revealing it. You know, and there's some really, really intensely hidden stuff. But when I think about like my version of Easter eggs, what it means, the most meaningful game to me is absolutely Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. And a really good example, the game has a lot of examples of this, but a really good example is the seeing stones, the talking stones. There's so many things you can just do with those. They're like a little Easter egg interactive toy. Like, you can, you know, of course people discover first that you can bomb them and they slowly blast off into the air. Mm-hmm. That's a really good example. There's a bunch for those. And then also another really good one in that game is attacking the Koopas until they attack you. Like, that was so crazy that was in there. And then there's like hidden messages and stuff in it too. Like, there's just all kinds of stuff in that game.
The second quest in Zelda 1. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good example.
It's a pretty big reveal.
Ooh, I'm looking at an old IGN article on Easter eggs. Psycho Mantis in Metal Gear Solid, where he would read your memory card.
Oh, you've been playing Castlevania.
Yeah, Castlevania fan. John Romero's head in Doom, or Doom 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
It's on top of like a spider and you kill it or something like that.
Cool.
So it's grafted onto something.
I think, I don't recall. He's in some hidden room. It's basically in like a little closet. You can find his head.
There's one for Gabe Newell as well, where he's like hidden in Half-Life 1. It's like the Gaben room, and there's just a billion pictures of his face.
Portal built in a bunch of Easter eggs that ended up being story reveals. Like, you could get behind the panels of a room, and then there's like somebody had been hiding out there, and there's like messages and stuff like that. But you can miss it.
Yeah, you know, Ratman.
So I really like that.
That's like environmental storytelling that you really have to seek out. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
And then of course there's Banjo-Kazooie, which built in Easter eggs for a system that Nintendo would not allow them to enact, which was the stop and swap. Yeah, so they built in like a view in the ice level, Freeze Easy Peak, where you could see the ice key through this grate. And there is even a code entering that you could do about the ice key and like all this stuff. But the point was that you were supposed to be able to put in Banjo-Kazooie 1, take it out, put in Banjo-Tooie really quickly. So I guess like it hangs in the RAM of the game, and then you'd be swapping it. And then you could transfer some stuff from that game. I think that was the basic idea of it. But Nintendo was like, no, you can't do that.
Stop and swap's so cool.
So they just kind of shoehorned them in the second game. But for a long time, it was like this big secret with code entry and objects in the game. There's eggs in a bunch of different levels that were actual Easter eggs. I should have mentioned that from the start. Really, really cool stuff.
There's a few good ones with Squaresoft and Nintendo. The original Final Fantasy, you go to an elf town, and then there's a grave there that if you investigate it, it says, "Here lies Link."
Yeah.
In the original game, it says here lives the Elric, or it's the name of the Dragon Quest person.
In the Famicom version, the original Famicom version, it says here lies Link. But that was changed for the NES version and then reinstated for like the GBA and PlayStation remakes.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
And then also they have a cool broom that talks to you that speaks backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually a code for the game to reveal the game map, which is push start,
select
maybe.
Yeah, it's like select plus A or something, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Matoya's Cave.
In Matoya's really Cave, which is the song that plays in Matoya's Cave is one of the most like banging songs on the entire NES. And it's it's a total banger, and it plays in a random cave at the far north of the map. It's insane.
It is a good one. In the original Dragon Quest on NES, there's several characters that ask you if you know someone named Nestor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is pretty, because Nestor was a character from Nintendo Power, and they were pushing Dragon Quest pretty hard back in the day.
Yeah. It didn't work.
And then the other one I wanted to mention is Super Mario RPG, when you see a Link sleeping in an inn. He's just sleeping. sleeping there. He's like,
says, and so is Samus, I think, in some part.
Samus is also sleeping. I think she says, "I'm resting up for Mother Brain," something like that. Mm-hmm. And I never realized.
Just played.
What's that?
Sorry. I was going to say, I just played a new game that just came out called Maquette. And there's a weird, like, off the path thing you can go to, and you go to this place that you would never think to go to, and it's a doghouse, and it has all the developers' pets in there, like their actual pictures. Hmm. I only know about it because it was a trophy, but I thought it was cute.
Another GTA one is a full-on Xenomorph frozen under the ice in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. GTA. Oh man, when you think of Easter eggs like GTA and Fallout, like that's just. There's in GTA, you can swim to the bottom of the ocean. There's the Lost, like, submarine. You know,
right.
Thing from that there's, thing from Lost. There's so much in those games.
Battlefield had that shark.
Yeah, the hatch.
Oh, yeah, the shark. Yeah, and of course, Call of Duty Zombies just puts out an Easter egg by nature. Yeah. And they have a release sequence for them to be uncovered by the audience. They actually time it and everything. It's like a whole part of it. I mean, that's a really cool culmination of Easter egg culture. And of course, we can give the briefest of history lessons about how Easter eggs were originally put in games to show people's initials because they weren't allowed to put their initials in the manuals of the games.
Mm-hmm. And the creators, the developers.
The developers. An example of that is Adventure.
Yeah. The last one I wanted to mention is one that I didn't realize. I never knew until just recently. Do you know the password Easter egg for Mike Tyson's Punch Out? If you put in, I wrote it down, 800-422-2602, it'll just play a busy signal because that was the Nintendo's customer service phone number back
cool.
in the day.
Cool. That's so clever.
Yeah, it's so good. Okay, one more email before we get to 20 questions. This is Tyler from Wisconsin. This is long-time listener, first-time writer. Do you have any games that are your guilty pleasures? By this, I mean games that are good, but the reviews don't necessarily reflect that in the same light. Also, if a game receives bad reviews, are you automatically not going to play it? Is it unfair that reviews can basically dictate whether or not a game will be a success or not?
So guilty pleasure games, this is like Mark Medina, right? So I play a ton of Anthem. I'm still playing Anthem. It's back there on my PS5 right now.
Why is that a guilty pleasure though?
Well, because I mean, no, just the guy says it's a game that wasn't reviewed well. And to most people, Anthem is a completely dead game now that Anthem Next is canceled. The game will never get an update. It will eventually shut down. And that's why I'm replaying it, is because eventually that game's just not going to exist. My most played game, PlayStation does those look backs to talk about hours played. For the past 2 years, my most played game was Fallout 76. And then No Man's Sky is good now, but I played that game so much when it first came out. And it was considered not good when it first came out. As far as the reviews question, I don't think reviews for a game dictate itself. Is that fair? I think reviews are answering whether or not a game is good or not, and that's what dictates the sales, not the review itself. I think it's the game itself that dictates those sales.
Yes. Yeah, and I think we have data that proves that even bad reviews can help with game sales because it's all just increasing awareness, mm-hmm. right?
First of all, Mario Party, the series, they're not great. They're not made for me and they've always been fun and I like them and I like reviewing them too. I've done a bunch of those reviews. I really like those. But I was going to give a list of really bad NES games. I highly recommend playing with your friends because they're so bad, but they're very funny. And, that includes, Family Feud, Essential. It's asking you, questions about what was popular in 1988, which is just very difficult.
Yes.
To figure out. what do you have to get when you go to the supermarket checkout line? That answer is surprisingly not what you'd expect. gum is in there and then everything else is crazy old timey now, you know?
Yeah.
So there's stuff like that. Yeah, exactly.
Rice-a-roni.
Yeah. And then there's celebrity stuff, which is I don't know a single name in this list or musicians or whatever. That's a good one. And then I'll go faster through the rest of them. I really like California Games is really funny to play because it's really hard to figure out how to play it. TNC Surf Design. The game is just dripping with style and terrible and funny. And you wipe out in it and it looks really funny. Those are games I love, have a few beers, play these, or don't, and play them with your friends because they're so bad. And then I really like Wally Bear and the No Gang. That's a anti-drug game, which, you know, is a serious message, but is just executed in the worst style possible, but with a unplayable platformer that you can't beat the first level on, so you don't learn anything about the anti-drug message. Let me see. There's got to be more, but I really, really like just look at like the bottom of the barrel movie adaptation games on NES2. Your Predators, your Terminators,
Rambo.
Try them out. They're funny. They're really, really funny, and you can see the effort that was put into getting them out very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. You go first.
In terms of guilty pleasures, like the actual honest answer to this question is like kind of trashy mobile games, hidden object games, paint by number. I have completed many paint by number in puzzles on the iPad just because it's a super chill out, just like ultimate zone out and turn my brain off and see this really pretty picture get filled in. I play a lot of like weird, it's weird because it's these two extremes. I play the most ultra casual grandma games, like hidden object games to unwind, but then like really, really hardcore esoteric PC stuff. Like I was into a game like Factorio way before it broke through into the mainstream and before it was on Steam. And I'm kind of trying to convince people around the office like a crazy person, like, oh, this game's really cool. Check it out. And then like, I always feel vindicated when, you know, it hits a major platform and then breaks through in a bigger way. Like, I think Dwarf Fortress is going to be, you know, I've been a fan of that game for a decade and it's finally coming to Steam. But definitely weird hardcore games on PC, like weird simulation games are my jam for sure. That like, I wouldn't describe them as a guilty pleasure, but like I am on both extremes of like the gaming spectrum in that way.
And as for the question, if a game receives bad reviews, are you automatically not going to play it? I would say no, not automatically, although it's not very often that a game gets bad reviews. And I'm like, I still want to play it. I would say it's much more common that a game gets good reviews and I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Clark in Clarkland. And he actually had a hard mode suggestion that we're going to ignore. His hard mode suggestion was any PS1 demo disc.
Oh, that's good.
That would never work out. So we're going to go with his normal mode suggestion. And with that said, let the questioning begin.
The demo disc thing is really, I'm still hung up on that. That's really interesting.
Makes you wonder, yeah, that's... I don't think we would ever go. I would always be thinking about the question, a game.
We need to have a new starting question, Damon, is this some bullshit?
is this a bullshit game?
No.
I didn't actually. Okay.
Yeah, what? No, I didn't want to spend a question on that.
Oh, that's right. If you're joking, that's fine.
That was okay. A free one.
Well, because I knew this one wasn't going to be because you got rid of the bullshit game from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I want to point out that bullshit is an academic term and not a swear word. So
I don't have to
worry about it. Yeah.
Sure. does this game... I
didn't mute our producer laughing this time.
Me neither.
It's given me a lot of confidence. So thank you.
But the listeners can't hear him. I think it'd be cool to have...
I know that.
It'd be cool to have a laugh track, but...
I was going to ask halfway through. I was like, am I supposed to be able to hear John Borba? Because it makes me feel funnier than I actually am. So that's fine.
Yeah. I like it
nothing,
too.
If nothing else, we made Borba laugh.
It reminds me of, you know what it makes me think of? Remember the old Tom Green show on MTV?
Was there just a single person laughing?
Yes. He had his friend Phil. I don't know if he was a character, if he's a real guy, but he would sit like back off to the side and just laugh at all of his jokes.
So on The Late Show now, which has really good intros, and I really like it. I only started watching it during this horrible past year.
Yeah, I know.
But his wife is on.
And she laughs
off the corner. Oh. And it's so good.
It's really wholesome and
good.
And
sometimes they interact, and it's great.
That's Stephen Colbert?
Yeah,
that's good.
It's not The Late Show though; it's A Late Show.
Yeah, I started watching Stephen Colbert recently as well. Yeah,
What are we doing right now? I lost
we're gonna,
the.
We're going to play 20 questions.
Some talking about our favorite game. Late shows. Also, Borba is a character. I just want to put that out there. He's
is this from game... after 2000?
Yes. Yeah, okay. After 2000.
Does this game have multiplayer?
No.
That after 2000 question is becoming more and more irrelevant the older
should we ask if it's single player?
Maybe it's a... I can only think of one zero-player game.
It's a movie.
Yeah, Ghost of Tsushima movie. Is this on Switch?
Yes.
Ooh, is this made in Japan?
Yes.
Is it a 3D graphics?
Yes. That's 5.
Is it... Should we ask if it's exclusive to Switch?
Yeah.
It's just on sure. Switch.
Yeah,
sure. Is it exclusive to Switch?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, okay. Published by Nintendo?
Yes.
Oh, and it has 3D graphics?
Mm-hmm.
It's exclusive to Switch. Published by Nintendo.
Published by Nintendo. Okay.
It's probably ARMS.
No, that's some bullshit.
No.
We've established that the bullshit on this.
Does this game contain Mario characters in it?
No.
Does this game feature characters that would be on the Smash roster?
No.
Oh.
It's not ARMS. Didn't a stretchy arm guy come to Smash?
God. Yeah, probably.
Oh. I don't think so.
That was one of the DLC fighters, right? Or did I dream that?
I don't know. I think I dreamed ARMS. I don't think that's a real game.
Is this game part of a series?
No. That's 10.
So, Damon, you said no, they're not in Smash.
I bet it's that jump rope game.
Yeah, I bet it. But that would be some bullshit.
Jump rope game?
Yeah, the free jump rope game that Nintendo released.
Yeah, it's going to have to be something pretty new if it's not part of a series. And to not be in Smash Brothers, it's going to have to...
Maybe it's the Ring Fit game.
But Snipper Clips has multiplayer, right? So
Borba, you're right. It could be Ring Fit.
No. Did you just call me Borba?
Oh, yes. Oops. Sorry.
That's some bullshit. One time when I was in office, 7 years ago, Lucy O'Brien walked up to me and she was like, "Hey, Borba," and I was like,
"Oh my goodness,
what?" I just.
Same. Yeah. Oh, what's that
Look
face?
That
what's
that face?
any attention is good attention these days.
Yeah. Oh. Is this game?
Go ahead. Oh, okay. Did this game come out on a Nintendo Disc little cart? Did it come out on one of the cartridges?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not jump rope. It's a retail game published by Nintendo. That.
Might
okay,
be a
so
Ring Fit game.
Could still be Ring Fit.
Could be.
Can't be ARMS.
Nope.
There's a stretchy arm guy in Smash, right?
Yeah. Also, and Xenoblade has people in Smash, right? Like a lot of
you
them.
You said not multiplayer. ARMS is multiplayer. Good point. So.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Could be Ring Fit.
Ring Fit doesn't have any multiplayer.
We have a lot of questions left, right, Damon?
Yeah. We have 9 left.
Did this game come out? Did it come with an accessory?
Yes.
Do you use this game to exercise?
Yes.
Has this game chinned on the sode?
You're wasting questions here.
Yeah, come on.
Remember,
who
cares? We have
as
stats.
Long as we get it.
We have stats now.
We do care.
Stats. Oh, okay, delete my last 7 questions. We knew what it was.
Is it Ring Fit?
It is. Ring Fit Adventure. That's why I was a little worried when you brought it up earlier.
You must have panicked earlier.
Yeah, I was like, should I pick a different one? No, we'll just go with it.
Hey.
That's fine.
Good cue from John Borba, too. He got it right up there.
Dude, Ring Fit's so good. I played a lot of Ring Fit, and my wife and my daughter played it even more than I did. It's so much better than it has any right to be.
It's fun.
It's both a harder, more hardcore workout and a more hardcore video game than I was expecting. Like, in the beginning, it's like this casual, you're jogging along, fighting things, but then you unlock like a skill tree, and you level up, and then you unlock new skills, and you level up your skills, and you make smoothies, which are like potions, and like it's way more involved than I like expected. It's awesome.
Have rings like broken and hurt people?
Like when people would throw their Wiimotes?
Yeah, like I'm pretty proud of Nintendo. If the case so far has been like there's been no ring related injuries, they finally figured it out.
I when I first got it, just because it's like it's something new that it's like a lot of money. It's like $80.
Yeah.
The squeezing one always kind of terrified me because I was like, what if I'm just so buff that I'm just going to shatter this thing?
Oh,
I'm not. Well, everyone knows.
The level of R&D in the Ring Fit and that Ringcon, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they got it right on the first try. But like, I imagine it went through many, many, many iterations because my 5-year-old can squeeze it enough to like, you know, she can squeeze it. Oh. But then it's an enough for an adult too. Like you just squeeze it way more. It's like a resistance band. And so you kind of get out of it what you put into it, where you can squeeze it a little or a lot. And the magic, I think, is in the Joy-Con being sensitive enough that it can pick up on either level of movement. I don't know. I love Ring Fit, and like I kind of fell off of playing it, and I think often about like getting back on that horse again.
It has this thing where you can set a timer, and we haven't touched our Ring Fit in so long, but still to this day, if we're in the living room and that's where Amanda's Switch lives, you'll just hear voom 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 voom, and I'm like, can we like stop with this thing? She's like, it's supposed to tell us to exercise. I'm like, I'm completely trained to just ignore this thing. I will never exercise to the sound of that thing ever again.
It has an alarm. Like, you want to be reminded to work out.
Mm-hmm. I've tuned it out.
Yeah. It's just become an alarm of shame in the Medina household now.
it's just there to remind me that I'm halfway through another bag of chips and I should probably stand up.
Yeah.
And just ignore it.
You gotta play some more Anthem.
Someone's gotta.
No, they don't. Nobody's gotta.
Oh, that was the saddest revelation on this whole podcast or this whole show.
And that's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Mark, thanks for sitting in with us.
Thank you, Mark.
You're
Justin's
welcome.
Justin's going on spring break.
Mm.
We'll see him in a couple weeks. Thank you to Sam. Thank you, Justin.
Cheers.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you to Borba working behind the scenes. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. My name is Damon, and this little one's name is Same. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out. Woke up.
Sheridan, New York Times best-selling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance. Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.